The conference, of course, is about gossiping. So most people, you know, they come to confession, they say, I gossiped. And because it's normally speaking of venial sin, unless there's something grave that's involved in it, most priests don't pursue it too much. The church, of course, teaches us that if we commit a mortal sin, we have to confess the lowest species. So people come in and say, you know, I committed impurity. Well, what does that mean? That's a pretty broad category. You have to confess the lowest species, and by that we mean the one that's the most accurate in what it actually is. So in this, they normally don't, priests don't pursue it, but gossiping is actually usually several sins that come together at the same time, and most people are kind of unaware. They just kind of know they're yakking and they shouldn't have been and that type of thing. And so what I want to do is I want to talk about the various sins that come together and the virtues that they're against, in order to get a sense of what gossiping fully is. The first virtue that it's actually against, the first vice that it actually commits, is what's called curiositas, or curiosity. And curiosity in English just has a sense of you'd like to know something, right? But curiosity in the theological tradition has a very specific meaning. It actually is defined as pursuit of knowledge that's not proper to your state in life. So it's a very important thing to keep in mind. So a lot of times people are pursuing knowledge they have no business knowing, or that's not good for them spiritually, and that in the end it actually causes them damage and that type of thing. And so it's very often they engage in the gospel because they want to know certain things that they have no business knowing. In fact, the first sin of curiosity was the first sin ever committed. The fathers of the church tell us that when Eve sinned, she committed 5 sins in the fall. Don't feel bad. Adam committed 8. Okay. So the first sin was because Eve had infused knowledge. When she saw the serpent talking, she knew better. She knew she should not be paying attention to that because there was something wrong with it, that it should not be talking, because she knows that animals cannot talk. But instead, she allowed her curiosity to kind of get into it. So that giving into the curiosity, that pleasure in kind of know and in seeing what is this thing, is the first sin that she committed. And so that's one of the first things that people have to do, is kind of cut that off. The next sin is detraction. Now, detraction is defined as saying something that's true in order to destroy or to bring someone's reputation down. So that the goal is to actually to affect the person's reputation in some way. And this detraction, you see this all the time, where people go, did you hear what so-and-so said? You know, and and they start talking. And even the detraction itself, because of fallen human nature, when we say something against somebody, particularly if we don't like them, we get a certain pleasure out of it, St. Thomas says. And that has to be also moderated, which we'll talk about in a bit. Then if you consider how much detraction is done by traditionalists, it's a bit off the charts. In fact, the gossiping in one apostolate, most recently, in fact, it was just posted on the Remnant's webpage. There was a case in which something happened, the priest did something, the parents were actually happy that their kid was disciplined in this fashion because the kid deserved it, from what I understand. But then what happened is certain people started talking, it got so far blown out of control, the bishop stepped in and the fraternity pulled out and they no longer have the old mass there. From gossiping. They destroyed their apostolate from gossiping. And so what's the moral of the story? Stop it. All right. And you see this also in traditions too, as they detract against the clergy, bishops, and the Pope. You see it all the time. They're constantly bad-mouthing the Pope and their bishops and the clergy. Not that the bishops and clergy and the Pope are perfect. You know, not that some of them don't deserve a bit of verbal thrashing. But the moral of the story is that it's not helping you in your spiritual life. And that's one of the principal things that you can think about when you're thinking about gossiping. Is this aiding my spiritual life? In fact, St. Thomas says, can I say something bad about somebody? That's a question he asks in the Summa. And he says, there's three things that you have to have in place in order to say something bad about somebody. The first is it has to be just. Now, justice is a mean, so it's neither greater than it is or worse than it is, than what the person actually did, that it's just. That it's charitable, that is, you're doing it for the love of God, ultimately. In other words, you have to tell somebody because, you know, you don't want them to become hurt by getting involved with a particular individual, you know. The third is that it's necessary. And by necessary, we mean that the person that you're telling them, it needs to actually know this information. Otherwise, you don't say it. And this is important because as people gossip, it tends to bring the morale down in the particular community that they're living in or working in or what have you. And as time goes on, it just sinks. Whereas if people just be quiet, you know, and back to the curiosity, there's certain things that most people in a community just don't need to know about what Mrs. Kerfluffelwitz is doing with Mr. Adams. You know, they just don't need to know that. So what the bishops and the clergy and the Pope or what other people you see that do these things, what they need is your prayers, not your gossiping. So if you're going to use your tongue, wag it at God and not at the other people. All right. The next sin that's committed is called murmuring. I like the Latin word. It's susurratio. So it's murmuring. And murmuring is when you say something true or false, but normally it's true. And it's said to separate one person's affections from another. This is very common. For example, if people don't like Mrs. Kerfluffelwitz, they'll go and tell her, because they don't particularly like who she is or what she does, or they're very judgmental and they look down on her, and so they want to make sure that other people don't like her because she's undeserving of it, you know, that kind of a thing. They'll go and they'll talk to people quietly. It's not said out loud. It's not the type of thing that you do it publicly or to the person's face. It's said quietly to other people in order to separate their friends. And it's one of the ways in which people destroy friendships. The problem with murmuring is that when you want to separate people's affections from other people without a sufficient reason, it proceeds from malice. Now, malice, people think that is actually that you will something evil. Not exactly. St. Thomas says that malice is actually defined as choosing the lesser good to the detriment of the greater. So what happens is the person actually chooses, you know, to strip this other person of the affections of other people because they get a certain pleasure out of it, and they don't want this person to have it, and they get a certain delight out of it, etc. And as a result, in order at the detriment of their own soul and the soul of others. Murmuring is the technical name for it, but we would probably say talking behind people's back. You know, did you see what Mrs. Kerfluffelwitz did? You know, that kind of a thing. Then the next is calumny. Now, calumny is lying. It's saying something false about someone to someone else. And calumny is very often done in order to satisfy the person's desire to bring the other person down. Again, it proceeds very often from malice. And you'll very often see this. How do you know that malice is part of gossiping? Because when people get together, they kind of start out, it kind of starts out on kind of this feeding the appetites level with each other, and then it slowly descends into disgruntledness, anger, judgmentalism, and that type of thing, where people walk away from it irritated, annoyed, and actually hating people at a certain stage if it gets too bad. Then there's contumely, which is a form of calumny, but it often has contumely is a little bit different because it has the connotation of saying something damaging to someone's reputation, but to their face, where they accuse somebody of something to their face. Now, that's normally not part of gossiping. Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Contumely? C-O-N-T-U-M-E-L-Y.
C-O-N-T-U-M-E-L-Y,
contumely. So someone who's contumacious is the one who goes around accusing people to their face of bad things. Now, that's normally not part of gossiping, but that can be the effect of gossiping. For example, if you gossip with somebody and then they tell someone else, and then that person gets hurt and goes and accuses the individual to their face or says something, you know. And what can happen is over the course of time, as people become more judgmental, fact, St. Thomas deal with that a little bit. St. Thomas asks the question, what is required to judge somebody? He says, again, there's three things that are required. The first, he says, is authority. You have to have authority over the person. Now, most people that we pass judgment on, we don't have authority over them in any way. Only God ultimately has authority over the conscience of another individual. The second is that it has to be done according to justice. Again, neither worse than or less than it is, right? It has to be as it is. You know, when you make a judgment, it has to be this person did X, no more, no less. You don't exaggerate it. You don't lessen it, etc. But the second last thing he says is you have to have knowledge. Now, it's a fact that none of us have access to the interior lives of other people. None of us. We don't know. We don't know what's going on in their interior life. We don't know what kind of baggage they're carrying. Now, baggage is a term which I use for demonic influence. Some people are just driven to do certain things, and how voluntary it is, we don't know. So you have to be very careful about that when you're going to pass judgment. What happens is those with the gossiping, you're setting people up to pass judgment. So you end up becoming, you end up being the occasion of their sin. So I tell people, look, it's worse enough that you're responsible for your own sin. Don't become responsible for other people's sin. The next thing it does is it violates temperance. Now, temperance, St. Thomas says, is the virtue which regulates the pleasures in relationship to touch. But we're not talking about that here. It's not with touch, but he says temperance can be taken in two ways, in the more restrictive sense, which I just defined. Or it can be taken in a much broader sense to be any kind of pleasure whatsoever. There's certain kind of intellectual pleasures that we get from hearing about what people say, right? That's why there's a problem of curiosity. Aristotle himself says everybody desires to know, right? There's a natural inclination as to want to know things. The problem is that has to be regulated because it's harmful to us if we in this life. In the next life, there's absolutely nothing you won't know. Don't worry about it. If you want to know what Mrs. Kerfluffelwitz is doing, don't worry, because at the final judgment, everybody will see everything you did and everybody else did entirely, both interiorly and externally. Because you hear people from time to time says, well, I thought that when God forgave you, he forgot. No, that just means he doesn't hold it against you. God, because every time you sin, you're sinning against the public authority of the universe, and therefore he has a right to public vindication of every infraction of his law. That's why you have to stand there and account for every idle word you said. Because he was violated, justice was committed against him, and he has a right to that vindication publicly, and he extracts it out of people. Okay. But this temperance, the broader sense of temperance where it moderates these other kinds of pleasures, that's something that very often happens. The people who tend to gossip the most are the people who don't have the virtue of temperance. They're not moderating the pleasures that go along with talking in relationship to that. You know, they did these brain studies, and they discovered that when women eat chocolate, their brain is flooded with these pleasure drugs, right? And there's different kinds, but it's just flooded. That's why, you know, the woman eats chocolate, she feels loved and contented and happy, right? Okay. Men don't get that from chocolate. What they found out, though, is in doing these brain studies that when men eat meat, they get that same experience. Their brain is flooded, right? So I always tell people, you know, it's one thing if a guy has some type of medical condition and can't eat meat, but if he doesn't like meat, Houston, we have a problem. Right? Okay. All right. But that being said, they also did brain studies, and they found out that when women talk, of course, as you know, their brains are actually much more developed in that part which deals with speech. But when women talk, they get 4 times the amount of pleasure out of talking than men do. And that explains why the wife is, and the guy's like, right, okay. So, but the point is I tell people, that's actually a perfection, not the talking too much. The ability, or the pleasure to get and you get in talking is a necessary thing because it's ordered towards children. They know for a fact, because they've actually had cases of this, where women who never talked to their children actually ended up brain damaged as a result of the mother not talking to their kids. That's why women just have an inclination to talk a lot. And it's a good thing. It's necessary for children, child development. It was not, however, intended for your husband or for other people. All right. On the other hand, men don't talk enough sometimes, and that can be the opposite problem. So, but the point is in all of this is that that has to be regulated. A silent woman, I guarantee you, a silent woman is one of the most endearing things to a man. It's a really attracting to a man to see a woman who's silent, quiet, and moderated in that respect. Because in the dealing with that temperance issue, he knows she's actually modest. Modesty is a much broader virtue than the kind of dress you wear, or the fact that you even wear dresses, that kind of a thing. It's a much broader virtue. St. Thomas says it's the virtue which regulates all of the person's externals, all of them. In fact, it's one of the first virtues corrupted and the last perfected. Why? Because when you get angry, what's the first thing you do? You don't regulate your externals. You get mad, you pout, or what have you. And so it's actually virtually every sin you commit, except those which are purely in thought, corrupt modesty, because you're not regulating your externals. Now, dress is only one part of that external. Your comportment, your speech are also part of that. Every time you gossip, you violate the virtue of modesty. This is why I tell trad women who are talking and gossiping a lot, but they're running around wearing dresses, look how modest I am. No, you're not. You only have one aspect of the virtue, and obviously it's not very well developed. And very often the reasons for wearing the dress are very often more haughty. It's a haughtiness than it is anything else. And I'm not saying you shouldn't wear dresses, don't get me wrong. I mean, you can listen to my stuff on the internet about that. But what happens is when you speak, you're not regulating your external speech. So it's a sin against modesty. The other thing is, too, is very often, through the gossiping, people violate the first principle of modesty. The first principle of modesty is don't draw attention to something that's immodest. For example, some woman comes to Mass. She's not dressed quite as modestly as she needs to be. So what do you hear people doing? They're standing outside. Did you see what she was wearing? Look at her. Look what she's wearing. And you're just like, hello? You know, it's that lack of restraint ends up violating the very virtue that they're accusing the other woman of. When we draw people's attention to other people's defects, we're causing the other person to violate modesty because they're not practicing custody of the mind or custody of the senses when they're listening to us. Custody of the senses and custody of the mind are a much broader virtue than those things which pertain to the sixth and ninth commandment. It's anything that causes me spiritual or moral damage I have to get out of my mind. And this is what ends up happening, is people are drawing other people's attention to these things that are actually harmful to them spiritually. You're not helping that other person. This also, it ends up violating the virtue of decorum, which is a sub-virtue to modesty. As modesty, you regulate your externals. Decorum is the virtue in which your externals fit who and what you are interiorly. So, for example, the virtue of decorum says that in relationship to talking about other people, you only say what suits who and what you are, right? I'm not this person's keeper. Why am I running around telling everybody about their sins and defects? Right? And decorum also makes sure that what's going on internally fits what's going on externally. So, for example, lying is not only a virtue against justice, St. Thomas says, but it's a virtue against decorum, because what I know internally is not what I'm saying externally. So it's a virtue, it's against modesty, but it's also against the virtue of decorum. But decorum also means it fits time and place. So you don't go to Mass in shorts. That's against the virtue of decorum, right? This is one of the reasons why the book is about to come out, but it's part of an article I already wrote. I said there are certain songs, you know, putting a man to death is not the time to be singing Kumbaya. Or another example, because that's what the Mass is, right? We're reenacting Christ's death. Another thing is, I tell people against the virtue of decorum, the guy's dead body is laying in the aisle and they're belting out Alleluia at Mass. It's against the virtue of decorum. Because it doesn't fit the circumstances. People are in agony and you're belting out, you know, Alleluia, right? There's a real disconnect, but you're seeing that more and more with people. Sometimes another sin against modesty is what's called admiratio. It's broadly translated in English as wonder. And what admiratio is, it's when a person does something to draw attention to themselves and cause wonder in people, like, wow, look at that. So the guy with spiked hair and all the tattoos and all that, you know. In fact, it's kind of funny because people say, you know, oh, well, I got this tattoo because I wanted to be different. And today it's not different at all. Everybody's getting them. Right. But there's this desire to want to be kind of the center of attention and causing admiration. Man, how do you know all this stuff? You know, how do you know everybody? How do you know everything that's going on in the neighborhood? Right. There's a certain sense in which people want to be the center of attention. Gossiping is also against supernatural prudence. It's actually part of what's called carnal prudence. Carnal prudence is the vice where you pursue pleasure, right? And so carnal prudence is that, okay, how can I get this pleasure out of talking, right? Or how can I get this pleasure out of the things that I'm doing? But supernatural prudence, you have to ask yourself, will what you say help this other person spiritually? If it won't, keep your mouth shut. It's that simple. Even when we are talking about good things about people, it rarely helps oneself or other people. So even when the gossiping is talking about the good stuff, aside from the fact that it's just immoderated and lacks self-control, it in fact is against prudence because it's not helping me, it's not helping the other individual. The saints make the observation, along with Aristotle, that if you're trying to attain a virtue and you have a vice, what you do is you shoot for the opposite extreme because virtue lies in the mean. So if you're talking way too much, then what you do is you just don't try not to talk at all. And then eventually what will happen is you'll find the mean about knowing when to talk and when you don't. But if you've been following carnal prudence all the time, and this is one of the real things that happens, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this in more detail in the next conference. When we get a certain pleasure from something, it affects the image in our imagination, and it makes us think, when we make a judgment, it makes us actually think that what you're doing is better than it actually is, right? Or that it's not so bad. When you get a certain pleasure out of it, it's not so bad. So the problem with all this talking is that it, and this is why it fits carnal prudence, which is pursuit of pleasure, what happens is that as the people talk and talk and talk and talk, they're not moderating that particular side of things, the pleasure that they get in the talking. Another sin it's so often against is justice. Let's face it, gossiping causes a lot of damage. You can see that even in your own family very often. You know, certain members of the family talk, the next thing you know, the whole family is destroyed as a result of it. But every time we commit an injustice by talking against people and bringing their reputation down without a sufficient reason, again, if there's a necessary cause, you know, like if your daughter is dating some guy who you know is a moral degenerate, you have to sit her down and say, look, this is what I know about this gentleman. I don't think you should be pursuing any kind of a relationship with her. That's a necessary thing. But if it's just because you want to talk about somebody, you're causing damage, and you have to make restitution to that person's reputation as a result of it, because it's called retributive justice. You have to pay back what you've taken. A person's reputation is like their property. If you take it from them without a sufficient reason, you have to restore their reputation to the degree that you can. I know of a priest, because particular people in a parish didn't like him because he would not do their bidding, started gossiping about him, started making things up, and before it was over, the priest almost lost his ability to function as a priest. Fortunately, the bishop and his superiors found out that what they were saying were lies. But by that time, they had destroyed his reputation in the community, and they have done nothing to restore it. Now, St. Alphonsus Liguori is absolutely clear. If there's any aspect of retributive justice for which you have not paid back, that's why we do reparation, by the way, that you have not paid back, you'll spend time in purgatory if your soul is saved. It's for every infraction of that. If you cause someone to lose their job or affect their marriage, affect the ability of the people's ability to approach a particular priest openly and reveal their soul because of things that you say, you have to repair this damage to the degree that you can. And that normally means that you have to go back to the people that you've said the bad things about this, or that you've destroyed the person's reputation. You have to go back to those people and say, look, I really should not have said that, you know, or maybe I exaggerated, or I didn't tell you the truth, or what have you. You have to go back and tell them, this is what I did, in order to make it up to that other person. If you don't, again, you're going to spend time praying. And if it's something grave, you'll lose your soul over it. If you gravely harm someone's reputation as a result of it, you can lose your soul over it. Now, there's two orders of justice. There's what they call the natural order of justice. And that's like, if I steal $50 from somebody, I have to give that person back the thing that I took, $50, or its equivalent. So if I steal his tractor, if I go to Father Van der Putten's land and steal his tractor, I either have to give him his tractor back, or I have to give him the financial compensation for it. If I can't, there's some things that occur that you're incapable of fulfilling the natural order of justice. If you destroy someone's reputation, you can restore it to the degree that you can, but there comes a point where you simply cannot pay the person back what you've taken. It's just not possible. But then there's a transcendent order of justice, which is the other kind of justice, and that's what we owe between us and God. Every single sin that you commit has to fulfill the transcendent order of justice. Now, normally, the way that we fulfill that transcendent order of justice is by fulfilling the natural order. So if I give Father Van der Putten the $50 for his beat-up tractor, if I give him the $50 for it, then I fulfill my obligations to God as well. But if I can't do that, I at least have to fulfill the transcendent order of justice to God, and that means praying for the person, or doing certain, or praying for the people that I gossiped, that got into the sin with me, that type of thing. I have to pray for these people so that it does not end up causing me to spend extra time in purgatory, lose my soul. It's also against charity, gossiping is. Charity, one of the effects of charity is peace. And peace is defined by St. Augustine, and therefore the entire tradition after him, as the tranquillitas ordinis, the tranquility of order. And what does that mean? It means when your soul is rightly ordered and the faculties internally are rightly ordered, that's called virtue, or rightly ordered to God, then peace happens. There's a tranquility that occurs. Now, you can't have tranquility if you're yakking all the time. So what happens is the more charitable a person becomes, the more there's this effect of peace, because charity orders us to God. And so what happens is a person starts just becoming quiet. They tend towards the virtue of silence. The virtue of silence is the virtue when you only speak when necessary. And so that's a natural effect of it. But when it's the people are talking all the time, it actually does what? It disturbs their tranquility internally, because their emotions get all worked up about, you know, what Mrs. Grafluffowitz is doing. And so as a result, there's no peace. And then, of course, there's no charity either, because it often erodes the charity between different people. It often raises doubts and proceeds from a critical spirit, which is against charity, right? I often tell people, the reason the saint can say he is the worst sinner, the worst, and every person who gains sanctified perfection always attains this state where they think they're the worst of all sinners. And the reason being is because They can't judge other people. They don't know what's going on internally. That part of things is cut off. And as you gain charity, you begin to realize, I don't know what's going on there. I can't pass judgment on that. And so I don't know. It could be, in fact, that Mrs. Kerfluffowitz is doing this because, you know, this or this thing has happened to her. Maybe she's a very wounded individual, or maybe she's possessed, you know, or something. Who knows? But the thing is, I don't know that. But I do know my own interior state. And I know how disordered that is. And I know that my acts of my will when I've committed sin. I know my own conscience. And so because I have to, as St. Thomas says, judge what other people do for the better part. He says it's better to be wrong in judging people for the better than to pass judgment on them and be guilty of a sin of injustice. So when I judge them for the better part and see, okay, maybe this is what's going on there, then I recognize these people are probably better than me. Or maybe if they had the graces, they would be better than me. And so as a result, I have got to be the worst because I know all the graces that I've squandered. So it's something which, as a person grows in charity and sanctified perfection, they get quieter, they don't judge other people, and they just focus on their own spiritual life. Very often, it's against charity because it wounds other people. You know, there's a whole tradition of discussion about how sin wounds us. You know, unfortunately, it's been co-opted by the charismaniacs who have just adulterated the whole thing, right? But there's a very solid tradition. We say it every time at Mass, Sanabatur anima mea, heal my soul. Well, you don't heal something unless it's wounded, right? And every time you commit a sin, you wound yourself. Every time you're gossiping, you're wounding yourself. This is why you come away from it feeling worse off than you did before. But you also very often wound other people through that process. Not just the person you're speaking against who realizes my reputation's been damaged and they get hurt over it, but the very person who's listening to this is getting their faculties dysfunctional and disordered. Why? Because they're listening to things that are contrary to their state in life, and it's causing this disorder in their interior faculties, which have to be remedied through practicing virtue and making acts of reparation and things like that. Gossiping is also against the virtue called honestia. Now, it's one of those false friends, as they say in philology. It's not honesty. That's the virtue of truthfulness, or veritas in Latin. Rather, this is honestia, or we may say integrity, is sometimes how it's translated in English, but it has a very distinct meaning, honestia. It's the virtue in which you always pursue in every circumstance what is the virtuous thing to do. It's the first virtue that is corrupted. It is the last virtue that is perfected of all of the virtues. And so honestia is when a person, it doesn't matter what the circumstance, you know this guy's going to do the right thing. This is why I tell women, I don't care how good looking the guy is. If he has that virtue, honestia, you know he'll always do right by you. But if he doesn't, he's just going to be a selfish pig. Same thing as with women. I tell her, look, I don't care if you got to put a lamb chop around her head to make it appealing. If she is virtuous, you will have a wonderful marriage. I don't care how beautiful she is, if she's not virtuous, you will pay for it the rest of your life. It's all about virtue. But in this particular case, in gossiping, what's being shown when the people gossip is they don't have the virtue of honestia. They're not pursuing what's virtuous in that particular moment. May not be as entertaining, but it's not virtuous. Traditionalists often like to think themselves as holier than everybody else because they go to the old mass. But very often when they're gossiping, they don't even have this, they don't have even basic virtue in certain areas. Trads are some of the worst gossipers. As I mentioned, one apostolate, you can read about it on the internet, they lost the traditional mass at their parish because they didn't keep their mouths shut. It's literally that simple. So how do you stop gossiping? Well, the first thing is stop being curious about whatever Mrs. Kerfluffowitz is doing. All right, it's just you don't need to know that. All it's going to do is upset you, disrupt your peace. It's not worth it. Now, this desire to know, we have an inclination to know all things, right? It just means in this life it has to be curtailed for our spiritual benefit. The biggest mistake Eve made was wanting to know what the gods knew. Gods actually is just another name for the angels, right? So she wanted to know experientially, because that's what it says. You are forbidden to eat from the fruit, or eat the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, Adam and Eve already knew in a general way what evil was. God had infused that in their mind. This is evil, right? But they didn't know it experientially, and that's what God had forbidden them. But she chose to know what that was, and as a result, she fell. So the first thing you have to do is stop the curiosity. Just cut it off. You'll find that once you do that, there'll be a significant transformation in your spiritual life. And focus on your own spiritual life. Focus on yourself and not everybody else. You have to pray for others. Get into the habit of praying for people. When you see something, okay, I don't know what that is. It doesn't look good, so I'm just going to pray for whatever is involved there. You have to forgive others, because a lot of times gossiping proceeds from the fact that other people have hurt us, right? And so we want to do the murmuring thing where we tell other people, look how bad this person was, because look what they did to me. So yeah, forgiveness is very often the habit of forgiving, which is the word for the actual virtue for that is called clemency or mercy. It's the virtue of mercy. You have to start making reparation. If you start making reparation for the sins of your past life, you'll become more sensitive to the fact that, look, I don't want to add more to the heap that I have to make reparation for. Another thing is when people start gossiping, say something nice about the other individual. That usually puts an end to it pretty quick. Or just tell them that this discussion isn't helping you advance in virtue and you just really don't want to talk about it. And you're just not interested. Yeah. In fact, showing a lack of interest in what the other person has to say will kill their vice of admiratio. As wondering, wanting to be the center of attention to cause people to wonder about them and to be taken aback by them. Admiratio, incidentally, is the virtue in which you want to be set apart and different, familiar from everybody. And in that respect, it's called the vice of peculiarity. And so people always want to feel that they're special some way. One time I was talking to the bishop of this diocese, because he and I very often will talk about the virtue of humility and the various facets of it. And I was telling him, you know, at one point, I came to the recognition in my spiritual life, you know, Ripperger, you're just not special. And the bishop said, oh, no, you are. The problem is so is everybody else. And it's true, right? Each one of us are special to God, but not in the sense that we're really distinct from everybody else, except that, you know, how special you are to God is based on your holiness. There's one individual, though, that he doesn't treat anyone else like this, and that's Our Lady. That's why there's hyperdulia. His relationship with her is special. It is fundamentally different than it is with the rest of us. But it's ironic because, I mean, you get people and you wonder, man, you got to wonder if that woman doesn't think she's as good as the Blessed Virgin Mary. I mean, that's kind of what happens. So say nice things. Show lack of interest in what the other people are saying. Then lastly, pray. One of the effects of prayer is that as you lift your mind and heart to God and that aura starts to happen, an interior quiet begins to descend. Why? Because your emotions, which are moved by what's in your imagination, aren't getting their proper object, you know. And that's one of the reasons why if you don't have your appetites under control, if you don't have virtue in a particular area, the appetites when you start praying are dragging you every which direction, you know. Let's go bake those cookies with the chocolate in them. All right. So what happens is you get dragged around. But as you pray more, your emotions and your appetites will begin to kind of calm down and the person actually gets a certain, as St. Thomas, we get a certain delight from virtue once we've attained it. When we haven't attained it, it causes us, performing acts of virtue causes us pain. But once we gain a certain level of virtue, it becomes delightful. And so the silence that comes from praying will result in the person just wanting to take on that indisposition of being quiet. And so you won't gossip. In fact, very often people who develop meditation, specifically that kind of prayer, will find that their inclination to gossip, they find it in fact kind of causes a dissonance. It's kind of painful to listen to. They just don't even want to talk about it. You can meditate on the silence of Our Lady. This is one of the reasons why you know that there's certain apparitions that are occurring today aren't Our Lady. Why? Because Our Lady was a woman of perfect modesty. She's not going to, which some of these things do. She's just going on and on and on and on and on. And I'm just like, you know, she's not Our Lady. We know from the authentic apparitions that what does she do? She appears very concise, direct, to the point, gets it done, and leaves. Right? So 5, 7 maybe apparitions total, that's it. And usually there's a bit of a precursor and a wind down. Not this. Just like, it's just not Our Lady. Are these the kinds of things that she would say? Would she sit there and gossip? No. And that's what you have to do. If you're going to want to be like Our Lady, then you're going to have to gain that silence. Okay. If you'll kneel, I'll give you a blessing.
I mean, if you can't kneel, that's fine.
Benedictio Dei Omnipotentis, Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sanctus, super vos et manet semper. Amen.